We're very pleased to have Ken Prather from Indiana. I'm going to let Ken tell his story. He's had multiple experiences, some rather dramatic ones. He has a few physical impairments, student one. He works with so many different things. Amazing person. He works with animals, the zoo. He does Make-A-Wish work for children. Terminally ill children as well?
Terminally ill, yeah.
Terminally ill children, hospice work. I mean, he's got about nine different things he's involved in. So he is really cultivating the gifts he's brought back. I think that's wonderful. Without further ado, let's give a big hand to Ken Prather.
I would like to thank IAMS of Salt Lake City for having me here tonight. I would also like to take the time to thank Bonnie over here for making these arrangements to get me in touch with these wonderful people to come and speak tonight. Bonnie, I met at the Experience of Retreat in St. Louis, Missouri, which we will now be going into our third year, and that is a retreat especially for people who've had near-death experiences. Why do I sit in a swivel chair? I guess you need to know a little bit about me and how everything started. I have a disease called ankylosing spondylitis. That's a hereditary disease that starts very young and affects men and women in a different way. And my whole spinal system is fused from my lower back to the top of my head. It turns all of your discs and your vertebrae into pure bone. And my rib cage is fused to my backbone. I've had this disorder for over 40 some years, so I've learned to live with it. But I don't live with it. It lives with me. And that's what it has to recognize. I've dealt with this my whole life, and it was because of this disease that when I had my near-death experience in 1998 that my back literally shattered. And I have two 14-inch Harrington rods in my back, along with 28 nuts and bolts. So now you know why I'm sitting in a swivel chair. The security machines at the airports go haywire when I go through it. I've had two near-death experiences in my life. My first one was in my other life, as I call it. I was 9 years old. I had rheumatic fever, pneumonia, and the flu all at one time. And my mother and father took me in to treat me for the symptoms of rheumatic fever. At that time, this was back in the late 1950s. All they could do for you back then was give you sulfa drugs and penicillin, it seemed like. So they filled my system up with it, and I started swallowing my tongue. My mother at that time saved my earthly life, and they rushed me to the hospital. It was in the hospital where I went into a deep coma because of the reaction to the drugs. It was during the coma that I had an out-of-body experience. This experience was so profound that I was actually delighted by it. I found myself in the corner of a room, looking down at a couple standing at the end of a bed. Well, a couple at the end of the bed I couldn't make out very well because it was like a mist or a vapor totally in front of them. And I looked a little bit closer and a guy walked up beside him. And so I just thought about going somewhere, and I ended up in the hallway. And there was doctors and nurses everywhere walking around. And I was trying to talk to them, and I was just a young guy, and nobody would listen. And I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't listen to me. And so after being out there for a while, I guess I got bored, and I went back to the safety of the room that I came from. I thought about it, and I was there. The vapor sort of just dissipated. And when it dissipated, I could see the two people standing at the end of the bed. And those two people were my mom and my dad. There was a gentleman standing next to him, and he had a book in his hand. As I could see better and closer, the book was a Bible. The gentleman standing next to my mom and dad was a minister. And I saw somebody laying in the bed, and that somebody was me. I wasn't scared, I wasn't afraid, but I was startled. And just like that, I was back in my body. And that was my first near-death experience. Nothing spectacular, unless you were a nine-year-old boy. But the thing about it was, is I went almost 14 years, and I could not tell anybody about what had happened in that hospital room that day. I was afraid. I was scared. I thought they'd make fun of me. And this went with me all the way through my high school days. Well, finally, I got ready to go off to college, and I was standing at the kitchen table at about 22, 23 years old, and my mom and dad were standing there, and my dad was a wiry old brewery worker. And he was standing there holding a can of Falstaff beer, and I said, "You know, Mom and Dad," I said, "there's something that's been really bothering me for a long time. I need to share something with you." And they said, "What's that?" And I said, "Remember when I was about 8, 9 years old? Remember when I was in the hospital? Well, I could see you too." My dad looked at me and he says, "Kenny, you're crazy. You couldn't see it, you were in a coma." I said, "Dad, you don't seem to understand what I'm trying to tell you. I couldn't see you from the bed. I could see you from the corner of the room." He looked right at me and he says, "You know what, son? You have been watching way too much Twilight Zone." You know what? He was probably right, because I really did like Rod Sterling in the Twilight Zone. But I looked right at him and I said, "Dad, if I was standing in your shoes, I would feel the same way." I said, "But you know what?" I said, "That guy standing next to you and Mom, he was a minister." And my dad looked at my mom and he said, "Edna, did you tell our son what happened that day?" She said, "No, I didn't." And I said, "Besides that, Dad, he had on a brown shirt, a blue sport coat, and a blue tie." My dad dropped his can of beer. He was a believer. He believed ever since I told him that story at the kitchen table. Everything about my life didn't change. Everything about my mom and dad's life did change. Something happened to me on that day when I was 9 years old, and that's awful young to realize why it happens to you. So my life continued on. In the material and the physical world, there's a lot of us go through. And then in 1986, my mother, who was my best friend, passed on. In 1988, her sister came down with terminal cancer and was in Lafayette, Indiana, at St. Elizabeth Hospital. I was out driving a truck one evening, that's a job I had back in 1988, and the whole sky became totally white. And I pulled the truck over, and it was the middle of night, and I just slammed the brakes on, and I felt the energy of my mother fill my soul. I had no idea what was going on, but I knew my mother was with me. I asked her, I said, "Mom," I said, what's going on? Am I going crazy or something?" And the message I got was, "Go see my sister. They need to know." So I drove home, myself and my wife at that time. We drove 150 miles right away to Lafayette, Indiana. We got to the hospital. There was like 13 people in the room with my Aunt Margie. And the doctor met me coming down the hallway. He said, "Are you the gentleman coming from Fort Wayne to talk to your aunt?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he looked at me and he says, "She won't know you. She's in a coma and she's not going to make it through the night." I said, "Well, I still want to go in and see her because she will know me." And he said, "No, she won't." I walked into the room, and the very second that myself and my wife entered the room, my aunt's eyes opened up. She looked right at me and she said, "Hi, Kenny." And I said, "Aunt Margie." And you could have seen the 13 people, their jaws almost hit the floor. I said, "You know why I'm here?" And she said, "Yes, I do. I know why you're here, but my family needs to know why you're here." And I told them that their aunt, my mom, was waiting to help her over. So I went home, and 2 days later, I got a phone call that my Aunt Margie crossed over. And they had asked my cousin, they said, "By the way, was anybody visiting with your mom last night?" He said, "No, we all went home, because they said she was going to be okay, maybe for another day or two." And they said, "Well, we heard her say somebody to a lady by the name of Edna. She said, 'Edna, I'm so glad you came here. I'm ready to go home.'" And that's when she passed on. So you would think that would have woke me up to what was going on with my life. But it didn't. So in 1998, October the 12th, which is coming up, be my 9th year anniversary on it, at 10:26 in the evening, I was walking home from a part-time job in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I was exactly 1/2 block away from my apartment building. A car by a gentleman pulled up beside me. The first gentleman got out with a baseball bat. He said, "We're going to kick your..." And then I knew I had a problem. because he had a baseball bat, and all I had was a bag of groceries in my left hand and a six-pack of beer in my right hand. Four more guys got out. All five of them had baseball bats. To make a long story short, I was beaten by five gentlemen with baseball bats that night. I was picked up by the Fort Wayne Police Department. I had a broken back. I spent 32 days on life support. I spent 3 months in a hospital. And I spent 3 years in a nursing home as a resident. I just rehabbed out of the nursing home about 6 years ago. They told me I would never live, or they told my kids I would never live. I have read my own funeral arrangements, and they told me I definitely would never, ever walk again the rest of my life. That's where the near-death experience comes in. I saw the first guy come at me with the bat. I hit him. The next thing I knew, I was in a beautiful white light. I didn't go through a tunnel. The tunnel wasn't there for me. It was just a beautiful white light, like I saw my mother come to me back in 1988. And I felt the same warm and loving and beautiful presence that I felt when I saw that light in 1988. Then in the distance, I could see that mist occurring to me again that I saw as a child at 9 years old. And then the mist started clearing away, just like it did when I was nine. And who do you think was walking towards me? It was my mother and my father. And who was walking beside him? Somebody would probably think my aunt. She was probably around there somewhere. But it was my 235-pound Newfoundland pet dog. He had passed on 10 years before that. And when my dog passed away, my dog was my baby. I loved him so much. His name was Bear Bear. I actually slept in the kennel with him for 2 nights before he passed away. So even then, before I realized this gift, I was helping him cross over, and now he was coming to greet me on the other side. So if you ask me later on, does animals have spirits and souls? You had better believe it. Every darn one of them. And you'll hear about that in a little bit too, my work with animals. After my mother and father and my pet dog approached me, I was met by three wonderful beings of light who accompanied me with a brilliance rotation. I felt they were very wise. They never spoke. I could just hear and feel. It's total telepathy over there. There's no moving of the lips like we do here, nothing like that. You think of being somewhere, you're there immediately. Just the thought. It's timelessness. There is no time whatsoever. The one thing constant over there, and I told Doug about it yesterday, is now. Now is constant all the time. The beings of light, as I came to know them, I followed them down a beautiful path of nothing but pure light, and I entered into a garden. This garden was unbelievably beautiful as far as I could see, different colors, different flowers. The flowers were, from as far as I could see, but they seemed to be flowers to me. You have to realize that for me, and for a lot of near-death experiences that I've met to retreat and everything, our beings and the people that meet us on the other side will come to us as we will recognize them, as we will want them to be, as they will make us comfortable. You see what I'm saying? They want us to be less startled by anything. So they will come to you as something you recognize in the earthly life. And I saw the flowers. And everywhere I could see was flowers. And out of every flower, though, was something amazing. I felt like every flower that I walked by was alive, that had pure life. And then out of every flower, going up to the universe, as far as I could see, I guess that was the universe, was rays of light going everywhere. I came to know this wonderful venue as the Garden of Creation, where the birth of souls is taking place, where new souls are nurtured and created and sent off into their destiny and their purpose to be nurtured. It was from the gardens of creation that I was then taken to another tier, and these tiers I was shown and I was told and came to know as the planes of knowledge. Planes of knowledge are so many, 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 many different planes and tiers of how our soul starts on the other side when we leave what we are today, I guess, say here on the earthly plane. This is kindergarten. We're all in kindergarten. The other side is a much, much higher education. It depends on how you do your homework assignment here on what grade you start on the other side. And I don't think anybody wants to flunk, do you? Because of them bottom levels, you need extra tutors down there. I was shown a beautiful, beautiful venue of what somebody asked, I think Doug asked me yesterday, he says, did you see anything that looked like a building to you? Again, you see things that you would recognize to make you comfortable. The way they can integrate your physical status into a non-physical world. Like that is overwhelming, so they have to come to you in an easy way. So yes, I went into this place that sort of kind of looked like a building, but the best way I could describe it to Doug yesterday, it was like the walls were of blue, wavy marble. And the marble was waving, and the walls were alive. The building was alive. Everything was alive. When I went into this building, everything turned beautiful, bright white. And the building was still there, but what came to me next was amazing and wise souls that I do still call upon at times, but not as much as I had to. I came to know them as teachers of the light. They were very, very wise. Their energy, the rotation of their energy was much higher than that of the beings of light, as I described, who took me to meet them. The higher level I went to, the more wiser I felt I was taken to, the beings. We're all made of energy. Every one of us is made of energy. The faster our energy rotates, the more spiritual we become. So as far as I was taken up higher, I was taken up on a higher spiritual level. I spent what seemed like to me a long time, but was no time. And then I was taken away with a thought, and I ended up in a place that overwhelmed me, that I was humbled. I wrote a story about it, and the best way to describe it, I was taken into the light within the light, and I felt absorbed into it. I became it, and it became me. It became the source of all my higher power, and I became part of that source for that moment, for that very split second. I was told that I had to come back. I was being told this in very, very high power. I came to know this plane as the planes of creation also. They said I'd be bringing a form of this gift back with me, and that I had to come back. And that I would realize that when I came back, that I would continue to learn even when I came back to the earthly plane. And that would be part of the journey. That would be the major part of the journey. The light that absorbed me was the light of my Creator itself. And I felt an unbelievable feeling of warmth, compassion, and most of all, three very, very important words that I brought back. You have to remember, I was not a religious person. I didn't believe or not believe. I was sort of in the physical world, just going on and not really thinking. When I came back, the change that my children saw in me was drastic. I was told that I was to bring this gift back and that I would still be in contact with a lot of my teachers on the other side. Somebody says, how long were you there? Well, I was on life support for 32 days, in and out. How long was I there? I was there now, but now is forever. I woke up with a doctor standing over me 32 days later. He had an x-ray. And he said, Mr. Prather, my three precious children, young adults, 37, 26, and 25, out of 32 days that I was on life support, those three children slept in the lobby almost 25 of those days. They took the journey with me. The doctor looked at me. He said, "Can you hear me, Mr. Prather?" And I could barely hear him. He said, "We have to operate on you now. We cannot wait. We have to operate immediately." And I looked at him and I said, I could actually talk a couple sentences. I said, "What if you don't?" He said, "You die." And I went, I laughed. They thought I was nuts. They had no clue. I was trying to figure out, did I have a dream or what, you know? But I knew. I knew from that very moment when I opened my eyes, I knew that my true journey was just beginning. The experience, yes, the experience was awesome. It's even hard to describe at times. What has happened with the experience and the gifts and tools that I was given, that's what makes the experience special. So I laughed, and then I said, "What if you do operate?" I didn't say it that clearly. He said, "We have a 50-50 chance of losing you on the operating table." So damn, as Nike would say, I just said, "Just do it." Because I knew they weren't going to lose me. And anyway, I knew that if they lost me, that's fine. I'm ready to go back anyway. But go ahead, lose me. But they weren't meant to lose me. So he went ahead, and the operation was a success, except for making wands go off in her hair. I was in a hospital, intensive long care hospital, for 3 months. After I got out of the intensive long care hospital, I was sent to a nursing home, where they told me then I would never walk again. Literally impossible. So somehow, though, I felt like there was a gift that I was given that was going to come to me very soon. And it would have something to do with a healing light. But I wasn't sure yet what it was. I started going up and down the hallways of the nursing home. This is a very big nursing home in Fort Wayne. It has, like, I think, 215 beds. And a lot of people in a nursing home would be getting to the point where they were getting ready to cross over. Now, when I give presentations, I don't say death very much or dying, because it seems very final to me. So I say crossing over quite a bit. But I would go by the rooms where these people were, you know, where they were residents. And I was in a wheelchair at that time. And I just roll up to the room, and all of a sudden I stop by the room. And I went, "Oh, my goodness." And I just went into the room. There would be somebody laying on the bed, and most of the time nobody was with them. If you've ever been to nursing homes, you know what I'm talking about. A lot of them don't even get visitors. It's very, very sad. But that's a whole different talk show. So I would reach down and hold their hand. As I'm telling you, as I'm speaking to you, I'm getting the energy going through me now. And I could hold their hand, and I could tell almost to the exact half hour when they were going to cross over. I could feel their soul go in and out of my soul. I became one as that person laying on the bed. And I was humbled. I went, "Wow." And I would call a doctor or a nurse, and I told the nurses, I'd say, you better thick in here. He ain't got no shine left. You better call a chaplain or something, you know. And he would. He would cross over with them. The first 5 people I visited, I was 5 for 5. My percentage rate was pretty good, huh? They were starting to take heed, and I wasn't sure what was going on. So finally one day, hospice came by. They heard about me. They heard about what was going on. They wanted to know if I could become a hospice counselor for them in that nursing home. I said, I would be honored. I'd be blessed. Because I'd never met more loving, compassionate people in my life as the people who was with that hospice or any hospice. And so they made me a hospice counselor right there in the nursing home. The nursing home gave me an office to make bereavement calls to families, but most of all, I would be on call. I was a resident in the nursing home. I was on call when somebody got close, and I would go spend time with them, and I would help them to the other side. 2 of the most phenomenal gifts that I received at the nursing home, one of them was Frank Stanfield. Frank grew up in California. Frank believed, and ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That's it. Nothing else. Now, he's put in the same room with me, and I've had two near-death experiences? You think that was just for, a chance happening? No. Nothing happens by chance. Destiny has a way of letting you know what's going on. Frank had terminal lung cancer. Frank, I also have a little Chinese Shar Pei dog by the name of Brutus. And every Friday, Ken and Frank would take Brutus out to see all the residents in the nursing home and in the courtyard. Well, Frank became too sick, so I would take Brutus out. As the weeks went by, Frank became increasingly weaker and getting closer to crossing over. And one night, I remember the date very clearly, it was January the 14th, it was the year 2000, middle winter, temperature was like 0 or 5. Nurse came and woke me up at 2 o'clock in the morning. She said, "Ken, wake up, you got to get up." I said, "Why?" And they said, "Bruce is at the back door." I said, "Oh, no way, come on, let me go back to sleep." I got in my wheelchair, I wheeled down to the door, and there stood Brutus by the back door. This dog had walked 10 miles in a winter storm to a place he had never walked to before. He had never came on a leash or anything. He had been driven in a van. But that's 10 miles. And he got out at 6 o'clock that night. We called the sun, and he had come there in 8 hours' time. Walked to see his master before he crossed over. The nurse said, "Should I let him in?" I said, "Oh, yeah. I mean, he's here for a reason." And they let him in, and Brutus sat right in front of me, and he just stared at me. And right then, I felt the same exact energy that I had felt on my near-death experience on the other side when my Newfoundland came to me. And I just sat there and stared at that dog that stared at me, and the nurse said, "Ken, Frank's son can't pick him up tomorrow. Can he spend the night with you in your room?" And I said, "You better believe it. That's why he's here." So he went down in the room with us. We went into the room. Frank wasn't awake at that time. And the dog sat right next to my bed. And I sat right in my wheelchair and looked at the dog. And I said, "You know that I know who you are. And you know where I have been. So you've done your job now." And at that same time I said that, a beautiful golden glow came around this dog and dissipated out, just dissipated out. I felt the energy and the warmth again that I had felt on the other side. This dog had not walked there alone. This dog was helped. The very next day, TV crew was sent out, Wayne TV, Channel 15 in Fort Wayne. They come out and did a whole story on it. They had the miracle dog on TV, and when they were walking by me, I was sitting out in the courtyard in a wheelchair, and bang, for some miraculous reason, this guy who had been basically comatose for days suddenly woke up the next day and was able to talk to the reporters. One day only. When they were walking out, the reporter walked by me and he tapped me on the shoulder and he says, "Hey, they tell me that you can..." I said, "Yeah, all right." And that's all that was said. So many, many gifts like that were given to me while I was in a nursing home of people getting ready to make their transition. I think the most amazing gift, though, was, for me personally, was the gift of healing that I got. I was laying in my bed late one night, about the second year that I was in a nursing home. Frank had since crossed over. By the way, I went through 9 roommates. They said one more, I would have set a record. I got out. I didn't want to set a record. And I was laying in my bed. And so many things were happening so quick to me. Things that I thought I was ready for, but I wasn't sure. I was a bit overwhelmed by everything going on. This gift was humbling to me. And I asked my creator, I said, "Mr. Creator..." And, you know, different people have different names for different higher powers and different sources as God and everything. But I use Mr. Creator because I do a lot of mini classes at the zoo, and little kids like that word, Mr. Creator. It's a Sesame Street talk, you know. So I said, Mr. Creator, I need validation. I need something that I'm on the right path. You know, I'm here alone, and I just need somebody to show me that everything's going right. It wasn't 2 hours later. I was wide awake, and what appeared to me at the end of my bed was the most beautiful, beautiful angel I'd ever seen in my life. And I'm telling you from words of truth, because I wasn't religious. And this angel had on a beautiful, beautiful green, what I would describe as an emerald dress. And this emerald green was the same brilliant color that I had seen in the Garden of Creation. I just said, please help me. And she just looked at me. And she said, she was actually looked to me as be a form at the end of the bed. And she said, continue. And when she said continue, I visioned a mountain. That's the first thing I saw, was a mountain. The next day I called my kids and I said, I have to leave for Colorado. And they said, Dad, you're in a nursing home. I said, you don't understand. I have got to go to Colorado. I've been to Colorado about 13 times, and like I said, I never got past Glenwood Springs. But by the way, Utah is an absolutely beautiful state. Thank you for having me. They said, how are you going to go? I said, I'm going to fly. And they said, you can't go alone. We got to go with you. I said, no, I will go alone. Well, that was, you know, O'Hara, going through O'Hara in a wheelchair without an escort. I didn't have an escort. I did it myself. That was my third near-death experience. And I think I'd give five or six people their first. But I went through O'Hara. I handled it okay. A lot better than I really thought I could. Because I was wheelchair-bound. I got to Colorado, my best friend picked me up. He said, well, what do you want to do tomorrow, Ken? Because I had no clue what I was going to do until I got there. I said, Joe, and he lives in Parker, Colorado, outside of Denver. I says, I want you to take me up to Mount Evans and drop me off. That's the highest highway in North America. And the summit is 17,255 feet, I think. And you can actually get within 200 feet of the summit on the highway. And then he said, okay, do you want to go to the summit of Mount Evans? I said, yeah, and you're to drop me off and leave. He said, I know you need to go up there by yourself. I said, I won't be alone. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, trust me, if I tried to tell you, you would think I'm crazy. And he would, and he still does. What the heck, you know? But, so he took me there. He drove me up there. And I said, there's a lodge down, halfway down. You go down there. Come back up and get me in 4 hours. He said, Ken, it's 7 in the morning. I hadn't had him get there at 7 in the morning. So he left, and he left me up there. And he left, not willingly, but he did. And it wasn't 15 minutes after he left. I was sitting, let's say here, my wheelchair, just taking in the scenery and the energy, and not for me to the third gentleman here in the third row, a beautiful bald eagle come and landed right in front of me. And this eagle sat there and stared at me. And I could feel all the warmth and all the love and all the compassion and all the forgiveness downloaded into my soul like I've never felt before from this beautiful, majestic messenger of a gift. And I felt a tingling, like a wave of electricity shoot through me, like a million sparklers. I stayed up there for the 4 hours. That majestic bird sat there for almost one solid hour before he left. And then some other people showed up. I just felt like my soul had been cleansed inside and out. Went back to Joe's house. On the way back to the house, though, we stopped halfway down Mount Evans at the lodge. We got out of the van. I was still in the wheelchair, and Joe says, "What do you want to drink?" I said, "Coffee." Well, I don't know what I was drinking. And he went in, and I went around. I wheeled around to the corner of the building because I just felt like something pulling me over to the corner of the building. And there, standing right next to the lodge, was a very, very, very wise and old Native American Indian. And I just knew he was Indian. Maybe it had to do with the beads and everything he had on, but it sort of surprised me. But I felt an energy about him that was unbelievable. I looked at him and I said, "Hello." He said, "Hi." I said, "You weren't here when we came up." He said, "I don't remember seeing anybody standing out here." He said, "No, I just got here." I said, "Wow, what brings you here?" He said, "You." And I went, "Wow." I said, "I guess I don't know what you're talking about." Then I said, "I guess I don't know what a lot of this is about." I said, "I do, but I don't." And he said, "Because your visions will come to you with the help of what I'm giving you now." And he gave me a beautiful necklace with an eagle claw on it. And he said, "Eagle Song, your spirit guide wants you to have this." And he handed it to me right there, and he said, "It's yours." And I said, "Eagle Song?" He said, "Yes, we are one of the same." I went, "Wow." So I turned my wheelchair around, and I said, "Thank you." And it's a whole mouth. It hangs, touches my head. Get a lot of energy from it. I went around, and Joe was coming out, and I said, "Joe, come here, I want you to meet this guy." And we went over to the side of the lodge, and there was nobody there. And I got that call at home. And I pulled a lot of energy off of that. We got back down to Joe's house. He has he's got like a whole apartment in the bottom of his house. And that's where I was living while I was out there for about a week. Him, his wife, and his kids were upstairs. I'm sitting down at the bottom of the stairs in a wheelchair. And I just sat there, and I felt that flood of energy again. And I felt that tingling that I just told you about. I fell on top of the mountain, and I said, "Oh my goodness, I can walk." I got up out of that wheelchair, and I walked up that whole flight of stairs. His wife fell onto the couch, and he sat there, and he dropped his coffee cup. And needless to say, that wasn't nothing compared to when I got back to Fort Wayne in front of doctors and nurses. Well, that was fun. Because I got back to Regency Place Nursing Home in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I went out in the hallway the next morning. I got back late that night. And next morning I heard everybody talking in the hallway. And I wheeled myself down to the nurse's station. I knew exactly after being there 2 years when the doctors made their call. So there were the doctors and nurses and all that. And I wheeled up and they said, "Hey, Ken, how you doing? Just got back from Colorado, huh?" I said, "Yeah, I did." And I said, "I brought you guys a gift back." "Oh, really? What? Did you bring us a rock or healing stone?" And I said, "Well, yeah, you're close to the healing part." I said, "How about this?" And I stood up and walked. One of the nurses literally fainted. And that doctor, he just stood there and he just stared at me. By the way, I had to my whole ordeal with the life support and everything. I had 7 doctors. I still have 7 doctors. I still have the 7 original doctors. 4 of them really don't have to see me anymore. They just like talking to me. They don't want to see if everything's running. They want to see why everything's running. When I was on life support, my kidneys just totally shut down. I went on kidney dialysis. And they told my kids that's when they told them to make my funeral arrangements. And just like that, bang, my kidneys started up again. You know, the neatest thing about it was when one of the things that happened, my daughter has written a story about it. I was given an incredible gift. And the reason I'm coming to this part is to lead you up to my hospice work. I was given the gift when I was on life support of my soul being able to move in and out of my physical body. I could come and go. I do not remember any of it because I was at a job interview. And that's exactly where I was at a job interview. But I could come and go as I pleased. My daughter was standing there, I was telling Doug this story yesterday. She was standing at the edge of my bed one day. And she tells me, word for word, this is what happened. She said, Dad, she says, I'll tell you something. She says, I know right now, she said, it's very hard for you to believe in our God, or for you to have hope or faith. She said, but Dad, if you ever needed it, you need it now. And she said, what do you say that you and I say a prayer to God right now? And she said, I looked right back at her. And I don't remember any of this. I looked right back at her and I said, I'll tell you what. Why don't you say a prayer tonight? Because I've got an appointment to go see God tomorrow. And she wrote this all down. She journals everything. So I was awake, I guess, when I said that. But I was, you know, lights on and nobody's home. And I wasn't home, that's for sure. Well, I was home. That's about it. Yeah. So her and my second daughter, they told them, they said, well, your dad's awake. You can head back down to Indianapolis, because that's where they both live, in Indianapolis. And, you know, get a night's rest, and, you know, fresh clothes and stuff, because they were living there. So they said, okay, we will. So they started heading down Interstate 69 back to Indianapolis. And they said they got halfway down there, and the cell phone rang, and the doctor said, you have got to get back to the hospital right now. I said, your dad has just went in the deepest coma he's ever been in. I said, we don't know why. We have no clue. He's not going to make it. His vital signs are nil. And you can make his funeral arrangements anytime. They started making phone calls on their way back, making funeral arrangements for me. They get back to the hospital. They go up to ICU. Guess who's wide awake? I was, again. The doctors were just, they were lost. And she said that she knew at that point that I would be back. She knew I would because I told her that I had an appointment that time to see God. It isn't a surprise to me now that I'm now a hospice and they call me a near-death counselor. They put a new name, a new title on me, I tell them. I'm a hospice grief and bereavement and transition counselor. What I do is I make the journey with the terminally ill until the time of their crossing. I sit with them. I talk with them. I actually take them through near-death awareness. How many of you know what near-death awareness is? Near-death awareness is sort of like sneak previews of the coming attractions. Didn't you like that when you went to the movies? Sneak previews of the coming attractions. They actually get a vision of the other side to help ease their soul through peace and comfort. By being with these patients, I've had many of them, I've been able to give them a glimpse of the other side through my journey. We bond as one. Our souls become as one until they make their transition. As the time gets closer, I'm more on call because I can get a phone call at any time, anywhere, and I will be there if I possibly can. And a lot of times I don't have to be. A lot of times they tell me, hey, we know what's going to happen. You don't even have to be with us. And it's very comforting to the family, too, to know where their loved ones are going, who they're going to be with, and who they're going to see. Frank Stanfield, that guy I told you about who had Brutus, he's the one who didn't believe in a thing. Nothing. One day I was out in the courtyard. I had gone in the courtyard and meditate to music every day. It brought me closer to my spirituality, which I was nurturing in a nursing home. As he would get closer to that time of where he was getting weaker and weaker, he would continue to come out to the courtyard more often and just sit beside him. At first he wouldn't say anything. And I would say, Frank, what are you doing out here with me? He said, I don't know. Maybe some of that stuff you go through will rub off on me. I said, maybe it will, Frank. And finally one day he came out and he says, Kenny, what's heaven like? Whoa. What do you mean, what's heaven like? You don't believe in it. He said, well, you've been to the other side a couple times. He said, maybe I don't believe in it, but you can tell me what it's like anyway. I said, sure I can, Frank. I said, but I won't. I said, because what I'm going to do, I said, I'm going to write down on a piece of paper where I was on the other side and what I saw. And I'm going to wrap that piece of paper up, put it in an envelope, and then one of these nights, or one of these days, you're going to come and tell me what's in that piece of paper. He looked at me and he says, oh, Kenny, I can't. I don't know. I said, but you will, Frank. Frank knew he was going to cross over. He was with hospice at that point. By the way, I wasn't only Frank's roommate. He had the same hospice. I was his counselor, too. He got in on a buddy plan on that one. One night, in the middle of the night, Frank woke up yelling my name, Kenny, bawling like a baby, bawling like a big baby. I looked over at him, I said, Frank, what's wrong? He said, Kenny, there's nothing at all wrong. He said, I think I saw it. I said, you saw what? He said, whatever you wrote on that piece of paper, I think I was there. He said, oh my goodness. He said, I saw my mom. I said, where'd you see her? And then he described, almost to a T, what I had written on that piece of paper. And I got that paper out and showed it to him. And it was just like the burden was let off of him. He gave himself self-forgiveness. Three words that I learned on the other side was self-forgiveness, compassion, and love. Powerful, powerful words in a world where society needs those words. This is what I brought back. This is the gift that I came back with. Not just to have a gift to share with the terminally ill, but to take this gift one step further. I was shown by the teachers of the light that if I would take everything negative, but what I thought was negative in my life, and goodness knows, you know, if you've been beaten up by five guys and you can't turn your neck for 25 years, you could think of a lot of negative things in life. But I was shown if I could take everything negative and make it positive to help others, but it was never negative to begin with, I would be able to turn it inside out. And when you can do that, you have totally changed your soul to what it was supposed to be. I now, with this disease, which I can look at as a disease, I was telling Doug, I think we were talking about how I deal with it and everything, and I'm now a national speaker for the Spondylitis Association out of Los Angeles. And I became that last year. I went out and gave a presentation, and I must have did something right because they made me their national speaker. And it's what I said to you earlier. I don't live with it. It lives with me. So I use it as a visual tool. And we use it to help others going through the disease. I represent now over 850,000 people with this disease. And hopefully, by speaking out to groups and to politicians and to lobbyists in Washington, D.C., we can help them with some of their insurance. That's one way that I turned a negative into a positive. I also felt that I needed to help recovering alcoholics and drug abusers. I am a recovering alcoholic myself. I'm 9 years. I now have been counseling recovering alcoholics and drug abusers for the Salvation Army inpatient hospital. That is a wonderful and rewarding job. I've always loved animals. So I thought, well, I'll go volunteer at the humane shelter. Well, there's only so much I can do. So that was kind of out. And then I thought of the zoo. Oh my goodness, the zoo. Everybody loves the zoo, right? You got a great zoo here in Salt Lake City, by the way. Highly recommend you go see it. But I thought of the zoo. I thought of all the happiness of all the little kids, like that little beautiful baby back there, of all the wonderful animals and nature, I thought, that's it. But then I thought, how would they accept somebody in a wheelchair? What can I do for them? So I approached them, and they embraced me with open arms. They wanted me to become a docent, which is a handler of animals. And so I became a docent. Now I handle everything from hissing cockroaches to 10-foot pythons to kissing giraffes. The kissing giraffe routine, yeah. I started working with the zoo, doing animal presentations in my wheelchair. And then after a while, after I got my strength back, I said, see, I sat in a wheelchair when I'm at the zoo because it's slow, but I walk at the zoo. I could walk when I got there, but I sat in and I hold the animals. But while I was there, something other came along that was a gift from my mother. I was going through her cedar chest, and she had passed on years and years before. And all of a sudden, I noticed a piece of paper with a sick child with a bird beside it in a hospital room. And I looked at that picture. Oh, wow, that's me. That was me at 5 years old. I had had a double hernia back in 1954. The operation was a success, but infection set in. I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't drink water. I wouldn't talk to anybody. I was deeply depressed, and I was mad at the world at 5 years old. Well, they sent some play ladies in with a coloring book, and this little boy pointed at the coloring book and said, "My happy." Well, my happy was my pet parakeet at home, and I missed my pet parakeet. I wasn't happy. So the hospital went out, bought a parakeet, and put it in my room. Within 24 hours, this sick little boy became a miracle child. The infection cleared up immediately. He could eat in 2 days. But along with that parakeet came a reporter and a photographer from the local newspaper. That picture was taken of me 50-some years ago, and I found it in my mom's cedar chest. And I said to myself, I think it's time to unwrap that gift one more time. So I approached the Lutheran Children's Hospital in Fort Wayne about making visits to the Children's Hospital with zoo animals. The Lutheran Health Network and the Children's Zoo, they just embraced it. It was a win-win situation. So now we are the only zoo in the nation that go room to room with zoo animals and go into intensive care. There's nothing more rewarding than to see a sick child smile that hasn't smiled for a long, long time. My latest venture is now I started a new program called A Day Away. A Day Away is amazing, touching, incredible time. It's where myself and two other volunteers give a child a wish of a day of respite from a terminal illness. I take children to the zoo. They can either pick whether they want to go to the zoo for a day. They can go to a wildlife refuge who I'm associated with, where we have 400 animals. I just went out and bought two horses, so they can go there and feed fawns and everything. Or they can go to a riding therapy farm that's got 35 riding horses. They have their choice for a day away of respite. My first child, my poster child, I saw him, he just passed away 2 weeks ago. His name was Nick, and he's a precious child, and I gave the eulogy at his funeral. And it's really funny because I told him, he had asked me to come over to his house about a week before that. His mother said, "Nick wants to talk to you, Ken," because I wasn't only there with him to give him special gift. I was there with him because he wanted to know also what heaven was all about, because Nick knew he was going to make the journey home. And so we would sit for hours and hours, and we would talk about all the critters that was going to meet him on the other side. And he said, "Does critters have souls, Ken? Do they have spirits?" And so I sort of took care of that with him. He was so happy about that. The funny thing about Nick, you know what he wanted to be in life? He wanted to be a zookeeper. That was his goal. He wanted to be a zookeeper in a zoo. So we arranged it, and he had no clue what we were going to do. But he became the zookeeper of the day. So he did get his wish. He was a zookeeper. I went over to see one of my hospice patients. They called me and said that he had needed to talk to me, that he felt like nobody else would listen to him. His name was Lewis. Lewis had heard about my near-death experience. He knew then that I was the only one he could talk to. Because he told me that when everybody else thought he was crazy, that I'm the only one that was seen as being sane. I don't consider myself psychic. I don't consider myself to be a medium, even though many, many people put that name on me or labeled it to me, because I'm in constant touch with spirit guides and loved ones on the other side who are coming to help their loved ones cross over. So I'm all the time making phone calls to people saying, oh, by the way, you know, telling them things that nobody else even knew. I went over to Lewis's house that day, and I walked into his front door, and mind you, I'd never been there before. I never even met Lewis. I knocked on the door, he said, come on in. I opened up the door, I took one step in the door, and bang, it hit me. The presence in that room was filled like the presence I had felt on the other side. And I visioned on the staircase a woman of about 85 to 88 years old. That was the communication I was getting from her. And the dog. There was a dog standing beside her. And I could almost see the dog, like right there. But I knew it was a dog. And I turned to Lewis, and he was sitting on the edge of his bed. And this is his exact words to me. Oh my God, do you know they're here too? I said, yeah, I sure do. I said, Lewis, you don't know who that is. He said, they're up there, but I don't know who they are. But I know they're not of this world. See, Lewis had had a near-death experience 25 years ago. I said, Lewis, it's your mom. He said, oh my God, and he just started crying. And I said, I think I got to tell you something else. She's not alone, Lewis. He said, I know. Who's with her? I said, Lewis, it's a dog. He said, now you're going to tell me it's black. I said, it is black. He said, and then he started crying even more. He said, that was my black lab dog, Blackie. And he had saved Blackie's life once when Blackie was drowned. And he had been with Blackie when Blackie crossed over. Just like I've been with my bear. And now Blackie was coming back to help him cross over with his mother. The communications I get are sometimes unbelievable. I'm not even sure sometimes what's going on. I have to journal everything down. I sat back in the hospice home one day. They called me in there. I go in there a lot to work in the home. I'm out in the field most of the times, but I'm going to work to home. And at this time, they were getting ready for like four people. That's the reason they had me come in, to go into the rooms. And I could tell them how close they were getting, how their souls were getting. And then it was like, okay, give me a break, take an appointment. I started getting messages from all different directions. It's beautiful. 5 minute break, and then we'll finish up.
Could you tell us more about the teachers of the light?
They were on very higher levels where I was taken. When I was approached by them, it was immediately after I entered in this, as I call it, this alive room that had the blue wavy like water stuff. They were extremely wise souls. If I had to judge them in their height, as far as we judge people here, the beings of light would have been about 3 or 4 feet tall, and the teachers of light would have been about 20 foot tall. Their wisdom went beyond wisdom itself. I can actually tell you something that they told me, and I can quote this. This is one thing I learned from them. I was at a seminar once, and a gentleman was giving a presentation. And to make a long story short, when the presentation was over, there were about 300 people there. He said, I just want to know, he says, I want everybody to remember that the most constant thing in the world is change. Well, I had my chaplain from my hospice. I know there's a chaplain during hospice in here. I had my chaplain in the hospice with me, sitting next to me. And he said, anybody got any comments on what I just said about the most constant thing is change? I sat there for a second, and my chaplain looked at me, and she said, the teachers are light, Ken. Oh, I bet you are, aren't you? And my hand went up, and he looked at me in the back, and he goes, Ken, you got something you want to say? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, everything you said has been right on. I said, do you know about something change being the most constant thing? It's not quite right. Boy, you could have heard a pin drop. And he said, why do you say that? And I said, because change is not the most constant thing in the world or the universe. Now is. Then he could have heard another pin drop. I said, I'll tell you why. Because now we'll be here forever. Change can come and go, but even with change gone, now we'll still be here. Now will always be here. Change cannot survive without now, but now can survive without change. He said, where did you learn that? My chaplain stood up. I decided, teachers alike. So the teachers alike were, I started writing when I started journaling everything in a nursing home. I've got my manuscript all done. I started writing things down that were being downloaded me through me through the teachers alike. And I had no clue what I was writing at times. I handwrite everything. I do not type anything out until maybe after I handwrite it, because handwriting is soul prints of the soul. I feel your life force goes through your hands. And I want to write that down. Soul prints of light. What soul prints are you going to leave? Soul prints of light.
Do you have CDs? Do you have email or something we can get in touch with you? So we can...
I will give you my email and I will give you my website. How's that? My email is Prather, that's my last name, P as in Paul, R-A-T-H-E-R, Ken, at yahoo.com. My website is www.reachingforjoy.org. You can learn more about, you can download my 8-page short story about my near-death experiences and my journey. It also has 7 different message boards on it. I serve as an online counselor through grief and bereavement and spiritual awareness. So you can post there and get answers to any questions you might have.
You said before that nothing happens by accident. Somewhere in that we see the fates and the destinies of lives in the process.
Mm-hmm.
There must be key reasons why certain things do happen. And I'm curious to know, when you're walking home that night with your 6-pack of beer and your groceries, and for some reason you were attacked viciously by 5 men, what part of chance did they play in that event? Because it altered your life, I would say, substantially. And it has brought to us a blessing to hear your story and to see us in a different perspective. What can you say of that night with those 5 men? Is that chance? Is that an accident? What became of them, and what purpose did they have in being there and attacking you that night? Could you say?
Yeah, well, I can put it very clearly, best I can for you, and take this out of text any way I say it. If you would go somewhere and find these 5 men that beat me that night and took their coats off, you would find they probably had wings underneath. Sometimes it's the obstacles and barriers in life that makes us stronger, that makes our journey much more easier. Sometimes if we don't pay attention to what's going on around us, we'll do it his way.
I thought you would say that.
Exactly. And if they did catch these guys, which they never will, because how can you catch something that's not here?
You talked about the Garden of Creation, where souls were born.
No, I love that place.
If you elaborate, who were their parents? Were they born the way we are born? How long do they stay there? What are they like? Are they children? Are they adults?
Actually, what I saw and what I was shown, the best way to put it to you, the flowers that I saw as flowers in the rays of light being the souls leaving the flowers. I saw the flowers, I described it in my manuscript, as the womb of creation, where the souls were being given birth to. Their souls were being sent out to not just the earthly plane, but to all over the universe. Maybe that'll help answer somebody's question about, is there other beings out there? They are everywhere. But that's what I saw of them. These were all the birth of new souls. You say children, they weren't children. They hadn't even reached that stage yet. They would have become children when they reached their destination to where they were going. You know, they came from the light. The whole place was encompassing of the most unbelievable, beautiful white light that I've ever seen in my life or ever felt. I felt it more than I saw. As far as how they were conceived, I couldn't tell you that. I'll be honest with you. There's some things that we're just not meant to know. There's some things that I wasn't allowed to bring back. I can only share what I know, but I know what I saw, but how they were conceived, I couldn't tell you that.
Did you have any thoughts or feelings about your family that you left here?
You know, it's funny. I've talked to other near-death experiencers about that, and I didn't have any thoughts at all. I didn't have any inkling at all. Because I knew immediately from the very now that it happened that I was returning. I could see from where I was shown my children sleeping in the lobby. I saw them. And so, like, you know, I saw my mom and dad at 9, and my children, I shared that with them. They said, "But Dad, how'd you know we stayed there every night?" I said, "I could see you." But my three kids are very spiritual, so how can they not be, huh?
I'm just curious, how can we raise up our own vibration levels? And how can we know that we're on the right path? And what do you really think the purpose of this life is?
What is the purpose of this life?
From your experience, what do you feel, why are we here? What are we here to learn? Or how can we know that we're on the right path personally?
Well, those three magic words I said a while ago, love, compassion, and self-forgiveness. That's a big word, self. You can forgive everybody in this room, or they can forgive you. But self-forgiveness is the biggest one. That is the one that so many of the terminally ill patients that I'm with, that is their biggest obstacle, is self-forgiveness. And that's what I do with them, and I call it in my program, and this is a program I have at hospice, and it's really funny to see hospice people talk about this now, but my program is called Taking Out the Trash. And when we take out the trash, we cleanse your soul and rid it of all that garbage. And you know what? I pick up every day, taking out the trash, self-forgiveness. Don't be blaming yourself over things that happened years ago, days ago, minutes ago.
You say you merged with the light. Can you tell us a little bit about that? That's probably one of the hardest things to say. Did you also have a life review?
Took your question right away from you, huh? I did not have a life review because I knew I was coming back. But I was shown that I would live my life review by everything that I was doing now to turn it all around. And I have done that. I have lived my life review through my coming back. Do you have a life review? Most definitely. I was actually, one thing I didn't hit on, is that I was giving a tour of the planes of knowledge, of what different planes were like, where different types of souls started. It's during your life review you find out which plane that you start on. And your life review will guide you and take you to every wonderful and beautiful thing you did in your life, every smallest joy that you brought to somebody else, but it will also take you to some of the worst scenarios you didn't make possible. And you will have to go through all the agony and all the fears and all the pain that you have given other people. And you know what? You will be judged. People say, are you judged over there? Yeah, you are. But you know who by? Yourself. Because you will be so filled with love and the light when you enter the other side, that when you see all this negativity and all everything you might have thought you did wrong, it's going to make a big impact on your soul.
How about the merging?
The merging, the best way to describe that is to heat up a hot pan and take two sticks of butter and drop it in the hot pan and let the butter melt together, and then turn the fire off and take out one stick of butter. To describe it totally to you would be almost unreal. To merge into that light and to feel not only what I thought was a physical body but wasn't, but I felt my soul was cleaned inside and out. I felt like I was reborn. That was something to merge into my Creator. It humbles me. We continue to learn. You know, I wasn't shown a final destination, but I tell you, we continue to learn and learn and learn. Like I said earlier, this is just kindergarten. This is a cocoon that you're in now. Your body's a mere cocoon. And when you go home for good, you're going to turn into a beautiful butterfly. And it all will start there. You will understand everything much better. But no, you will continue on to you other people say, welcome to reality. This is reality. This is a prelude to reality. This is not reality, everybody. This is not reality at all.
Hi, I just have two quick questions. Since basically living things have a soul, a spirit, how about house plants and trees and bushes and window, you know? Then the other thing is, on the other side, can you talk with the animals, or do you just see them and it's just meow, meow, bow, wow?
Okay, let's go to your first question first, and then we'll go to the second real quick. I'll try not to make them too long. The first question is, and I told Doug about this too yesterday. Doug, why did I tell you so much anyway? Oh, that's right. He wouldn't keep quiet. He kept asking questions. Wasn't Doug told you earlier that I had become very close with some Native American tribes. I've been adopted into the Choctaw tribe. I've been adopted into the Cherokee Nation. The ring I have on was given to me by Holy Man, Healing Holy Man at a Healing of the Land ceremony. I have been brotherhooded into the Miami Nation in my area, and I have adopted and sponsored a child of the Lakota Nation, of the Sioux tribe. So I'm very into the Native American heritage. And I sat with a gentleman, a holy man by the name of Leon Pastorn, as he called it, to the happy hunting grounds, as his ancestors would say, about a month ago. We set out, I do a lot of my meditating, at an Indian burial ground outside of Fort Wayne. And he spoke of just what you're talking about. And he spoke of it this way. Everything is alive. He told me of the plants being alive. He told me of the rocks being alive. He told me of the air being alive. He told me of the earth being alive. The earth is alive, and the earth is not happy. The best way to tell you this is what he told me. Where you have something in your body that runs through your body that keeps you alive, what do you call that something? Blood? Yeah, blood runs through your body. Now what do you think that the earth has that runs through its body that keeps it alive? Huh? I think I heard Who said Jack Daniels? Water? That's a good answer, but it's not the one I'm looking for.
Oil?
Oil. Who said that?
Somebody first said oil.
Oil.
And that's what we were lacking.
Oil. Oil is made up of everything that was alive millions and millions of years ago. This holy man told me that oil, to the Indians, to many of the ancient Indians, was a sacred burial ground. Think about that. All living things make up oil over millions of years. Plant life, animal life, prehistoric life, dinosaur, everything goes down there is made into oil. I hope that answers your question. Yes, everything is alive.
Okay, how can you communicate with animals on the other side?
How can you communicate?
Can you?
Oh, most certainly. Critters on the other side? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And all the time. I mean, I have them come to me all the time with messages for their loved ones. And I actually can, through my pet loss support group, I will receive messages on occasion for people who come there wanting comfort. I also communicate with animals who are injured, who are hurt. I know, don't nobody throw any tomatoes or anything at me, because I know you've probably never heard of this before, but I am a spiritual counselor for the wildlife refuge that I'm associated with. I will actually go up there if an animal gets sick, and I can tell what's wrong with the animal. And the vet will actually call me and ask me to come up. I've even went into the office of the zoo and told the vet that they just thought this 10-foot python had a bellyache, or he had a herniated stomach.
What are these different souls that you refer to?
Different souls?
Yeah, she said that the new souls, different kinds of new souls are being created. So what are the different kinds?
You mean in the garden of creation? Well, they're all basically the birth of new souls, but they're sent in different areas, different places to nurture their soul. And every place they go, it's all about nurturing the soul on love and compassion and forgiveness and helping others and caring for others. And depending on, you know, I know what's going on here. They're going all over the universe, too, to do the same things.
In a way, if we do the self-forgiving here, what's the need for all the judging there?
So you can learn by the lessons that you did here. You can learn by that to help others coming over. You can forgive yourself anyway. You may actually forget a couple things that you did along the way. You are not going to remember everything wicked and sinful that you did. Now,
I hope not.
Yeah, me too. I hope I've got a lot of them, huh? But the main thing is to forgive yourself. But that doesn't mean that when you get over there, they're not going to show you the other 55 or 55,000 you didn't remember. Because you're going to go through every one of them. And it's going to be like a widescreen TV and an HD high definition that you've never seen before.
I want to thank you. Can we tell Ken how much we love him for this?